podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Red Tinted Glasses. This episode was recorded live on Friday afternoon. I was joined by Phil Mayer to do a watch-along to the Conference League draw that has seen Aberdeen be paired with Eintracht Frankfurt, PAOK Thessaloniki and HJK Helsinki. Spoiler alert, I know. There was some technical difficulties throughout the episode, but because this is one of our longer episodes, I thought I'd come on and do a little pre-recording for those joining in on audio for some timestamps. So the first half hour of this episode is speaking about the game against BK Häcken last night. Second half hour is looking at the draw itself for the Conference League and our kind of chat through the draws. We watched it live and happen. And from 59 minutes in, I was joined by Michael Monin to preview Sunday's encounter against Hibs. So thank you very much for tuning into the show and I hope you enjoy.
To be joining me on this, but good to see many of you have still joined the stream despite the unfortunate technical errors to start. See what happens when Calm's not here to keep me right. So a disappointing 5-3 aggregate defeat last night against the Swedish champions Häcken. I'm going to kind of go through some of the comments, as I said, since Phil's not here to kind of discuss, because a lot of you have been getting involved in the live before we went live. So I'm just kind of going to make my way back through them and pick out some comments that have come through. And I'm going to start with regular viewer of our shows here on YouTube. Kaiser, who said, we threw it away. Playing three at the back cost us big time, as can be seen with their first goal last week and also the second goal last night. Again, this is a point that me and Jamie discussed on the show last week, well, at the beginning of this week, actually, as part of the preview, because there's a point that Callum made to me about how much is that back five kind of restricting us? Is there almost a stubbornness from Barry in that back five? And I guess when we look at the team from last night, both Jamie McGrath and Jamie McGarry coming into the starting lineup made a huge difference. They were the two that we expected. And I think the biggest shock, unfortunately for us last night, was no Angus McDonald. And I've not seen or heard any explanation as to why Angus didn't even feature at all. And that meant, unfortunately, that Nicky Devlin had to come in to right centre back and Shaden Morris had to go out to wing back, and Shaden Morris is not a wing back. We are not going to win anything with Shaden Morris at right wing back. If you're going to be playing a back three and have two attacking minded fullbacks, you also need to be able to have a fullback that can track back consistently and also do it well. Morris does neither of those. And unfortunately as well for Shaden, he is far too predictable whenever he comes forward. Looks to beat the man. If he can't, try a weak cut back and then try and beat him again before putting the cross in. He was struggling with that at times as well. Good to see, though, that Phil has joined. So I'll add him into the stream now.
Hello. Sorry, I was running a bit late there, Glenn.
It's okay. I was having technical difficulties as well, so this podcast is going about as well as last night's performance. Just discussing the point you can see on screen, Phil, about the back three costing us big time. And I guess what I wanted to ask you was, playing that back three, how much do you think that did cost us? More so the fact that it was the back three that we had, given probably Rubizic was left exposed by having to deal with Devlin on the side and Shaden Morris was leaving huge gaps for Sadiq to run into at will. As I said last night on Twitter, it took Häcken 5 minutes to realise that right side was where they were going to get all their success from. And we did nothing until the 87th minute to change it.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite surprised we started with that 3/5, whatever you want to call it. When the team first came out, I was hoping it was maybe going to be a 4, maybe have Morris playing higher up with him and Duke on the wings. Because, I mean, I do feel bad for Morris in a way, because obviously he's not a wing back. And getting put up against the boy Sadiq was just ridiculous. I think he was always going to be in for a long night. And yeah, I mean, even just outside of that, I mean, I don't know if it was maybe just like a lack of sharpness, maybe even with Jensen. I mean, he seemed to get spun quite easily as well. So I don't know. I feel like the sort of, maybe not stubbornness, but the persistence to sort of stick with this formation maybe cost us slightly.
I actually thought both Jensen and Rubizic maybe got turned easily, more so Rubizic. But to be honest, I actually have no kind of concerns around Jensen last night. I actually thought he was terrific. And that ball for Miovski, I mean, what a ball that was. Let's not speak about what happened after it. But
yeah, I mean, in terms of like a ball-playing centre-back, he seems really, really good. Made a lot of good blocks as well. I think aerially, he looked a bit weak to me. Saying that, I mean, the Boyle Uni for being a winger looked massive, looks bigger than I remember when watching him last week on the telly. But no, I think he'll be fine. He'll slot him fine. I think Rubizic is the worry more than anything. Last night, he just didn't look like a player that was sort of made for that stage. I mean, I know he's young, so I mean, there's a lot of room for him to grow, but it's just silly errors. And we spoke about it last time I was on. I think there was a few times he was a bit rash, obviously giving away the penalty. But even outside of that, I mean, he was stepping up far too high at points, and you think, you know, they've got quite a quick attack. It was maybe a bit of a risk to have him playing that sort of style.
I remember for the penalty, I don't know how the referee thinks that's a dive, by the way. It's never a dive. I actually thought Ruby got a touch on the ball, but when I watched the highlights back this morning, I can see where the boy next to me was like, how are you thinking that's not a penalty? Because yeah, we can have no complaints. But I don't know where the referee thought there was a dive in there.
No, I mean, I was in the south, and even from the south, it looked like he's just cleaned him out. So obviously I was using some maybe questionable language, which folk around me are going, no, he's giving it as a dive. And I'm going, it's going to go far. Immediately, it's going to go far.
But, yeah, I mean, to be fair, the one on Duke as well, I don't know how the referee doesn't give that. I mean, I could even see that from the red shed that it was contact. It was just like he was not up for making any decisions. But, of course, we are here to do the watch-along for the Europa Conference League draw. That does start in about 5 minutes' time, probably about 15 by the time they get through all the technical procedures. So we'll speak about that when it begins to get going, but we will continue to speak about last night up until the build-up. Paul Donaldson, good to have you along, Paul. Always comments on the videos. Makes a point about that we played okay last night, created plenty of chances, but just weren't clinical enough. And Michael Taylor also up kind of a similar point where he says they took their chances, we didn't take the big chances we were presented, and that cost us dearly. And look, I said it last night on my own Twitter page that, unfortunately, that was the difference, being clinical. And I almost felt we lacked a bit of composure as well in key moments across the two legs. You look at the Duke chance over in Gothenburg last week, the Duke chance at Pataudry. I mean, last night was the first time probably this season that I am concerned about his level of engagement with this squad right now. I know a few people maybe questioning about whether his head's been turned, but yeah, unfortunately they took their chances. I mean, but also they missed an absolute sitter at 2-0. They hit the post at 2-1, so we can berate the missed chances that we had, but they also passed up some gilt-edged chances. And if you were over your PTSD from the Scottish Cup final in 2017, you've got a whole new level of PTSD with that Miovski miss.
Yeah, I mean, I think just firstly going to the Duke one, I think that's just a confidence thing. I think if that was in May and not August, that would have been both chances in the first leg and the second would have been buried. I think once he gets the first goal, I think it'll be a weight off his shoulders. I mean, there was a few times last night where he was a bit greedy, and I think it is just because he's chasing that goal. And he knows that he's chasing that goal. You know, there was a shot from about 25 yards out where he could have probably slipped in Morris on the overlap or slipped Miovski in behind. And he just took on this shot. And you think when you're not in form, you're not in confidence, it's not really the chance he should have been taking. So hopefully that will come. Miovski's one I was really surprised at. just with the vein of form he's been in. And I mean, some of the finishes we've seen him pull off in that situation. I mean, Motherwell last season, you know, lobbing Liam Kelly in a similar sort of position where he got put in behind. I was from the south. I could have swore it went in. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, same with the Hakan chances. I mean, the boy Sadiq, I mean, I said it last night on Twitter, is probably one of the better players I've seen at Pittodrie in a long while. There was something almost, especially the one that he hit off the post, almost, I'm not going to say Messi-esque because that's a bit too far. I'll say Saka. I'll say Saka-esque in the way that he's able to get shots off. You know, he's so good at just quickly shifting the ball. And I think that's obviously where likes of Morris, who's not used to sort of defending one-on-one, isolated against a winger, really struggled because he just shifted the ball so quick onto his right foot and whipped it over. But the sitter for Hakan, I've got no idea how they missed that. And again, it's one of those things that's frustrating about the game because, you know, they were missing easy chances and we had every opportunity to get back into it and we just didn't.
Yeah, well, you know, we did kind of use that miss to get ourselves back into the game, but about their miss, Sadiq had the freedom of Pittodrie at the back post and he unselfishly squared it and thankfully they made a mess of it, but ultimately it meant nothing as well. I guess, how do you view last night overall? Do you feel it's a huge opportunity missed? You know, looking at it kind of in terms of the prize money that we're going to get out of the Europa Conference League, even if we'd managed to somehow finish third in that Europa League group, that would have been a guaranteed £300,000 minimum for whatever you had in the playoff in to get into the Conference League. Do you view it as a huge opportunity missed? Or I've seen a few people like saying, well, look, back in May, we knew we were going to be in at worst where we are now. So let's just hope that we can maybe get a few players in, because of course it's transfer deadline day today and do something in these groups.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the sweetener is that we've got guaranteed Conference League. That's a sweetener at the end of the day. I mean, if we were in the same situation as Hearts and Hibs, where losing meant nothing, then obviously we'd be a lot more frustrated. I do think it was a chance missed. We dodged a lot of the big boys that we could have got in that playoff. And I mean, if you're Dave Cormack, I mean, it's a difference of roughly, what, about 2 million? You know, he's probably, with the money he's put into the club, it's probably frustrating for him to lose out on that. But I think regardless of what competition we're in, I mentioned it to a few of the guys that was in the pub after the game, unless we sign a holding midfielder, Europa League or Conference League, I think we're going to struggle. I mean, some of the Conference League teams are unbelievable in pots one and pot two. Yeah. You know, if Hakan's sort of tearing us apart in the midfield and defensively as easy as they did last night, you know, if the likes of Frankfurt and Beşiktaş and Fiorentina will do even worse with the sort of players they've got at their disposal. So I think hopefully we can get someone to help Shinny out and hold midfield, because I think he was just left isolated there to try and cut everything out, which, I think we're going to struggle unless we bring in somebody to hold.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was... certainly in the second half, but I guess the game really opened up in the second half because we had to come out and chase the game. Was the fact that we were missing that Ramadani shaped hole in the middle of the pitch, and Stephen Robinson confirming in his press conference today that Keanu Backus, there has been contact between the two clubs, so that'll be kind of one that's going to be keeping everybody refreshing their social media feeds up until about 11 o'clock, or is it midnight that it closes tonight in Scotland? Yeah, I'll get my yellow tie looked out for later on as well. So the Conference League draw is just beginning, so the probably 10-minute dragging out that UEFA like to do begins now. So there are... We'll have a quick kind of talk on the draw itself, because there's been some stuff that's happened from the Europa League draw that's going to affect the draw for Aberdeen, Phil. So because of the way UEFA regionalise or group the draws, we cannot be drawn into groups A to D because Rangers have been drawn in group C. So Aberdeen can only get drawn into groups E to H. And thanks to AFC Spare Tickets tweet, it is now likely we cannot draw Maccabi Tel Aviv, Lille, or Bodo Glimt, but more likely now to draw Villa, Legia Warsaw, PAOK Thessaloniki, or AZ Alkmaar as well. So you just know that reunion with Ibrahim Sadiq is coming up. You just know it. But is there teams in that pot one? And I think we can also draw Fenerbahce, who have got Edin Dzeko and Michy Batshuayi as their strike force, and also in talks to sign Alfredo Morelos. Is there any teams in pot one that you're really not wanting to face?
Pretty much. I mean, Alkmaar is probably one of the bigger ones, just because I really don't want to see Sadiq run the Mirkland again. I just really I don't think my mental health could take it. But no, I don't know. I think for us, like I said, unless you sign big, a lot of the pot one teams are probably not where we're gonna be looking to pick up points, because there's a lot of quality in there. I mean, I'm just happy if we got a couple of good away days. I mean, if we can maybe get Frankfurt, Bruges, you know, I'd be...
Bruges would be good, of course. Ronnie Dyla, currently managing Club Bruges as well. And they went through 4-3 against Osasuna as well. I would definitely take a trip to Belgium. It, you know, just on that, about maybe looking up games that we could potentially win in this Europa Conference League, it's €500,000 for a win. So a lot of money. For context, the Europa League, I think, was about €965,000 for a win.
Yeah.
So big difference in that as well. A draw is worth €166,000. And if we were to somehow win the group, we would earn ourselves €1.25 million. And finishing second gets us into the playoff. Win that, it's €925,000. And lose that playoff, we're out of Europe, but bag €625,000 as well. So still money to be made in the Europa League as well. Before we get into the draw as well, Phil, I guess, as we said, it is transfer deadline day. And we've just been speaking about the Ramadani-shaped hole that is missing from this team. Do you think we'll manage to get something over the line between now and midnight to replace that? Or do you see anybody exiting the club? Because, of course, Anthony Stewart, Vinny Bazawin both didn't even make the matchday squad last night. A lot of people suspecting it might be time up for those two at Aberdeen.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm in the same sort of boat as everybody else. I think Stewart's would probably be permanent. I think Vinny, I'm hoping, is maybe just a loan. I still think there's a player in there. If he can get a loan and get some good game time, then, you know, I think it's good to have creative options that we can sort of fall back on if needed.
Yeah.
Incoming wise, I'm not sure. It depends. A loan, potentially. I mean, I know that obviously Jeff Hendricks was bandied around. I've not looked to see if he signed with Leeds or Sheffield Wednesday or whoever it was that was sort of sniffing around him. I can't really see us getting him in, as much as a Newcastle fan as well, I would like to see us get him in.
I can't believe that we've even been linked to him. It feels mental.
I know. But saying that, I mean, stranger things have happened, I suppose. But no, Bacchus would be good, but I don't know where St Mirren's asking price would be. I mean, I know they accepted relatively low offer. Was it Birmingham or somebody?
It was Bolton. It was 200. Bolton. I want to say it was 200,000 or 250,000, because me and Callum discussed it on the podcast. Because I think everything, you know, the fee was accepted. It was just terms couldn't be agreed between player and club. Mm-hmm. And Callum was adamant that if Bolton can spend that on Keanu Bacchus, then we can. And you know, if we're spending $500,000 on Papi Gay, then I would like to think we can afford that on St Mirren. But the problem is, when you're selling to a rival in your own league, and St Mirren know what money we've got, similar to Hearts last season, I'm sure that price suddenly becomes a bit inflated as well.
Yeah, I mean, it could have even been the case it was like a release clause. I mean, a lot of clubs obviously put in clauses where if it's outside of their league, the release clause is, you know, completely slashed compared to if it was somebody internal. But I mean, even, you know, close to $500,000 for Bacchus, I don't think's a bad deal considering the sort of player that he is and the sort of upside that he's got. But yeah, if we can sort of keep it relatively relatively cheap and cheerful. We didn't complain at that.
Yeah, an interesting point from Craig Gardner saying that last night the defeat cost at least £2 million. I wonder how much that is going to reflect in any deadline day signings, he says. And I guess that is a potential knock-on from the fact that we won't have that. But I just wonder as well, I've seen it discussed, is what was the club budgeting for at the start of the season? Was the club budgeting for Europa Conference League, which is maybe slightly negative, if that was the case? Or were we had a little bit more in the budget on the hope that we got into the Europa League, which unfortunately we know now that we haven't done. I'll get your thoughts quickly on to Sunday, because there is going to be a preview coming up about the Hibs game as well on this broadcast. How much do you think last night's defeat is going to affect us going into Sunday's game?
I think it puts a lot of pressure on it. You know, we've not had the best start this season by any means, whether that's in the league or in Europe.
Yeah.
So I think it puts a lot on Sunday's game, and it puts a lot on specific players. You know, does Rubizic start? Does Duke start? I think it puts a lot of pressure on Barry as well, because I think I'd seen somebody on Twitter, I haven't actually looked into it too much, but is it two wins from 11 or something since he got the permanent job?
It's not pretty reading. And I think, you know, obviously only beaten Stirling Albion competitively this season. A lot of people are saying if we fail to win, how much pressure does that then put Barry under going into the international break, and the fixtures of having both Hearts and Rangers away to come as well, plus a League Cup quarterfinal before the month's out, and the first UEFA Conference, it's so confusing to say, the Conference League game as well. So a lot of big fixtures coming up.
But I think as well, with Hibs obviously being managerless at the moment, I mean, there's equally sort of pressure on them. I mean, they might have somebody earmarked to take over. So, I mean, players will be playing for places in the squad there. So I think it'll be tough. I'm not inclined to say either way which way I think the game's going to go, because last time, I think I said that last time on the podcast for the Hacking game, going, oh, no, we'll tear them open at Pittodrie. It'll be a great atmosphere, and lo and behold. So I'll keep zipped at the moment.
Yeah, it's difficult to kind of know how much that's going to affect, and obviously as well with question marks around Angus McDonald's fitness after last night as well, what kind of shape he's going to be in. And would you be looking at dropping Duke for this game? You know, he's going to be away with Cape Verde in the international break as well. I noticed Barry Robson saying in his post-match comments last night, we've got to be careful with him. You know, he's obviously trying to do a lot and it's not coming off, but, you know, all the usual manager guff that comes out, he's a great lad, yada, yada, yada. Would you just say, look, you're not going to start this game, and give Esser Sokler a chance?
Yeah, I mean, it goes sort of two ways. Does dropping him sort of have a positive impact on how he's going to play? Maybe put a little bit of a sort of fire in his belly to sort of get back in the team? Or does it do the opposite and sort of knock his confidence even more? Honestly, like, sort of, if he feels like he doesn't have the sort of trust. I think that was one thing that, you know, a lot of the players had sort of spoken about last season when Robson came in, was that they felt like he trusted them to do the job, and that helped them sort of elevate their performance. But I mean, we've spent big on the likes of Soccer. I don't think Gay's going to be fit for it. Or, you know, it might be a bit of a risk putting them in so early. But I mean, we've spent a lot of money to, you know, not give those guys a chance. I think we'd be daft. You know, I think we've got to experiment, especially our form, we've got to experiment a little bit and see what works. So I would be inclined to probably, personally, I would drop him.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I probably agree on that as well. And, you know, players from last night that did impress, MCG squared, but Jamie McGrath continuing to make people eat their words from the way he's kind of come in. I thought he was outstanding in midfield until he picked up that, I would want to say needless booking, but probably a booking born out of frustration as well. Jimmy McGarry looks absolutely class, but can he not take corners? Because, I mean, I think I could get a corner higher off the ground than some of his attempts last night.
I think I may be cursed him, because I'm pretty sure on the last pod I said about how good is that one corner in Haken. I was like, oh, it was a great delivery. He took his first one. I just went, oh, Jesus.
Really poor. But I thought that left side in particular of Janssen and McGarry looked really solid. Mm-hmm. After spending the first couple of weeks panicking about how the left side was weak, we're now worried about the right side. And Mark Robertson's absolutely spot on. Devlin on the back of a three doesn't work, in his opinion. I think a lot of us opinions as well would probably agree with what Mark said there. It's where we get the best out of Nick Devlin. We get the best out of him on the right wing, well, right wing back. And I just also think that when Devlin's playing there, in no disrespect to Rubisic as well, but it kind of affects him as well, because both of Devlin and Rubisic are having to compensate for the lack of defensive work Shaden Morris is putting in.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, in giving Nicky Devlin his credit, he's not played by any stretch of imagination bad when he's on the right-hand side of that centre-half. You know, he's putting a good shift. But no, I mean, his attacking qualities is where he's thrived and where he was really effective for Livy. So if we can get him consistently at right wing back, once McDonald's back fit, it'll make the world of a difference if we've got that sort of steady and consistent back line.
Yeah. So it looks like, as Paul Donaldson says, that UEFA are doing a full episode of This Is Your Life for each of the ex-players doing the draw. We are finally beginning to get underway with the Conference League draw, but unfortunately we are still going to have a bit of a wait, because they do pot one first and then work their way through to pot four. So just a reminder, as I said earlier, that we will be drawn in one of groups E through H. So you can almost discredit anybody drawn in groups A to D and score them off your trip list or your teams that you were hoping to avoid if they're in there. And I think as well, with obviously the Belgian teams as well, obviously there's a Belgian team in each pot, or there's definitely, no, there's two in pot one and one in pot three. Yeah. So obviously if Ghent or Bruges are drawn into one of group E to H, then we not be able to face Genk as well. Similarly, if Slovan Bratislava are drawn into one of those groups, then we will not be able to face Spartak Trnava because of the way that the regionalization works. I'm sure some of you, two trips to Slovakia would have been pretty good. I think they're explaining the technical procedures as well. I was watching the Europa League draw just to see basically who Haken got in the end, but also that because of Rangers being in that other group, I my understanding was that we will not play at the same kickoff time as Rangers. So if they're 5:45, we'll be 8:00, and likewise if we're 8, then they'll be 5:45. Questioning from Bob Duffer saying, will we get the actual dates confirmed today as well, or just the opponents? It will just be the opponents today. The dates will be confirmed tomorrow. They should be confirmed by tomorrow lunchtime, at the earliest, possibly latest. It won't be till tomorrow that any fixtures are announced. But I was speaking to a Hearts fan from last year, and he said that their fixtures were out by lunchtime. The dates as well, the dates are already announced, but obviously we don't know whether we're going to be home or away. So match day one takes place in just under 3 weeks, the 21st of September. Match day two is the 5th of October. Match day three, 26th of October. So we've got two potential trips in October. Two in November as well, 9th of November and 30th of November. And final match day is 14th of December. So if we end up with Kazakhstan, let's hope we do not end up there in the middle of December.
When's the final they're... so we can all book our trip, Glenn, because we're winning it. We're winning the lot.
I mean, I didn't go that far and look at that, but I know it's in Athens, so the road to Athens Operation 3-star starts here after us like bumping the road. So they're still explaining the technicalities of it. UEFA don't do anything quickly.
Young looking Claudio Ranieri with the looks of things, do
that. Yeah, he does.
And I know West Ham won it, but I'm glad I'm watching this on mute because I really can't be bothered listening to Mark Noble. I really just don't care.
No.
Michael.
I'm just adding up the Hibs preview, but forgot it just automatically plays. I nearly forgot to even do that. So honestly, today's going so well. I'm still too emotionally scarred from last night.
It was on a half day today, thankfully.
You did take one, did you?
Yeah.
I'm on an extended lunch break.
Ah, nice.
That officially started 32 minutes ago.
But yeah, no, went back to the pub after last night, so I'm still a bit emotionally unavailable.
Yes, you're enjoying a fair few Guinnesses, I saw from your social media as well.
Just a few, one of which got lobbed across the bar. not out of any anger or intoxication. I literally dropped it and tried to catch it. I'm just trying to clarify that.
Yeah. We're still actually not at the draw as well. I think that's them still explaining who can face who and who can't face who. But I'm finally going to get the teams coming out there. The balls ever so shortly.
Have we got anybody over for it? Is Davy and Alan gone over, do you know?
Yeah, well, obviously, I'm not sure if Alan will be over. Obviously, there was the sad news in the last few days about him and his wife having the second miscarriage in quite a short space of time. So really sad news for Alan. Obviously, thoughts with him and his family at this time. So I don't actually know if Alan will be there. Maybe he's also still up. Back in Aberdeen working on some transfers, but I do know you have to have representatives there. So I'm imagining Gunnar's going to be there, and I'm sure Dave will enjoy some musing in Monaco just now if he could. Get Stevie Cowan over there, he'll find all the negatives about the opponents. Right, so Lille are the first team out of pot one, and they go straight into group A. So we will be, I think as we already said, we will be avoiding Lille, which is, I guess, a good start.
So what did you say it was? Groups E to
Group E to H. I feel like Mark Chapman on FA Cup draw night. I've made like a little spreadsheet of like notes about all the teams as well.
Wow.
I mean,
you've done a lot more prep than me.
I definitely did that last night and not this morning. Right, so one of the Belgian teams is out. So Ghent is out into Group B. So that's one possible trip to Belgium off the mark. Dinamo Zagreb, third out. I wouldn't have minded a trip there. And they actually is a possibility for us. Dinamo Zagreb go into Group E, so that is the first possibility of teams from pot one that we can play.
They're showing up at C, and I don't know why.
I thought they flashed into E on there.
Potentially, because I've got like the wee draw thing on the side.
Oh, unless it's going like up down. Oh yeah, you're right. Oh, I was reading their screen as like A B C D up along the top. That would have matched mine.
Yeah, that's Bruges out into Group D, so we've missed them as well.
No trip to Belgium, that's hugely disappointing.
Alkmaar and Group E, it's not looking good. It's not looking good.
And so is that into Group F?
The Callum's Wii team.
Oh, yeah.
Farin
Valor. It's quite ironic if we end up with a trip to Budapest just weeks after he comes back. I'm sure he could persuade Caitlin to let him go again.
Saying that, I mean, if, you know, the four teams that will be left in the groups we can play are awful away days. Netherlands,
I mean,
Frankfurt, Fenerbahce, don't really fancy getting stabbed, but, you know, it'd be good fun anyway.
Good broad generalisation about a trip to... I suppose the only thing as well is that means in Group H, if that's where we did end up, we can't also face Besiktas, who are just loaded with ridiculous talent.
Yeah.
So you're looking at Group F, that's got the bottom seed from Pot 1. And then Group G contains, of course, Eintracht Frankfurt, as you said. And that is the top seed, probably good opportunity. And what I did find out about AZ Alkmaar, do you know a fact I found out about them? Since you're a bit of a NFL fan as well. Yeah. Their nickname's called the Cheeseheads. So for any Green Bay Packers fans out there, yeah. I thought it was a little fact that I found.
That's quite funny. Because like I said, my girlfriend Rosie, she's from Wisconsin. So
yeah,
she's a Cheesehead. She's a Packers fan.
I knew there was a connection there with you and Green Bay.
Yeah, I did go to a Green Bay game in London. So,
I guess from an away fan's point of view, you maybe are looking at the likes of Group F and G as well, because both those stadiums hold decent capacities that should mean there's no kind of clamour for tickets and restrictions on that.
Yep.
So there'll be no trip to Bratislava's Slovan get drawn into Group A, although, well, I suppose there is, because you could base yourself in Bratislava for Trnava, like many of the Tartan Army did a few years back when we got scudded by Slovakia over there.
Was that when Robert Mack just became like the greatest player on earth for
reason? Yeah, and Callum Patterson was being played at right back and was struggling massively. And at least we won't have to face Erhan Zahavi, and Robbie Keane is manager of Maccabi Tel Aviv. They've gone to Group B. That was a much better way of watching a draw.
I know. Get a wee thing on the side makes it so much easier. Oh, Villa's out.
Oh, here we go. They're going to go into Group E, aren't they? And then we'd have ended up with them. Oh, yeah, they have as well. For fuck's sake, you know where this is going.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, you can almost guarantee it's going to be the Group A's, which is going to be in Group E.
Yeah.
I'm calling it now. Astana and us are going in.
I like how you're calling it early. And Gothenburg 83 also backing you up there, saying we're also getting Group E. This is the 1 in 4 chance of Ibrahim Sadiq coming back to Pataudry. What a steal though that is for Altmar. $3.2 million.
Yeah.
Bargain.
I was really surprised he played. Oh, it's Fiorentina as well.
Also, I noticed the centre back that they had, Tabo, and that was handling with Duke as well. He got sold this morning as well.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. So just kept all their players and then sold them this morning.
I suppose it's a double dunt of finances, getting the Europa boost plus transfer boost. So yeah, it probably makes sense.
So in Group F, you've got Ferencváros and Fiorentina. Talk about FFF. There'll be no Kjell Knutsen coming to Pataudry. There's Bodo Glimt going to Group D now that I've actually worked out how they're showing it on the screen.
Yeah, Group D looks like it could be quite a good group. Bruges and Bodo.
So we could then get Pauk Thessaloniki, of course, who beat Hearts 6-1 on aggregate. They join Eintracht Frankfurt, although we don't qualify for that group because that's just teams that play in black and white kits in that group. I'm just going to keep finding analogies that
just find patterns. Just find patterns.
Yeah.
Go on, find one for this, Glenn. I believe in you.
Well, if that's into Group H, yeah, Ludogorets have gone into Group H. That is the only pattern I've found, is that is the group I do not want. a trip to Istanbul and slightly east of Sofia in Bulgaria, it just does not appeal. So I feel like that's where we're going to end up.
As long as there's one semi-decent away day in there, we can add in there. But
I suppose if you got a groupie as well, you could pretty much get the train to both those games. It's a long journey to Dalmar on the train.
As I said, I don't know if there's anyone in pot three that could also be trained. I guess Genk, potentially.
Well, yeah. I was going to say Astana, but that's I was going back to the A narrative for Group E.
Yes, yeah.
There's no Fs, though, to keep my Group F narrative going, which is a shame. No, Legia Warsaw are the first team out of Pot 3, so I don't know what restrictions they've got.
Oh, they're in Group E. Oh.
Are they in Group E? Oh, well, yeah. There goes that A. That would be a good trip, to be honest. I mean, their fans are absolutely mental, and the stewards would have an absolute field day at Pataudry with their travelling support.
Oh my god, yeah. Genk out as well. Group A, are they?
No, they've gone into Group F because they can't go into that side with Belgium, the Ghent and Bruges. So we could yet. Get a trip. Tell you, Group F for trips, it would be cracking three trips.
Yeah, Budapest, Genk, and Florence would be pretty nice.
My holiday allocations would get absolutely battered on Monday.
I've got 7 days left, and it's might just have to be used on Europe, and I'll just do all the Christmas cover.
I've got 12 days, thankfully, and that should cover me enough. So we've got two teams left to be drawn from pot three that would affect Aberdeen's outcome. There's no going to be trip to Zorya Luhansk, who currently play in Poland. They've come out into pot B, group B even. And here comes Astana. Watch them going to group H. Oh, thank God for that. C. I was going to say, if they'd gone into group H, then you knew that that's probably where we would end up. Three absolute horror trips. After saving all my holidays for a European adventure.
And you're off to the far-off regions.
Yeah. HJK Helsinki go into Group G, so a potential trip to Helsinki, along with Frankfurt and Greece.
I was informed last night that the HJK in HJK Helsinki just stands for Helsinki Football Club Helsinki, basically.
Oh, right, nice. Yeah.
So there you go. There's a fun fact. D.
So that leaves Trnava into Group H. So there's a potential trip to Bratislava after all.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, I think I would like Group F.
I think Group F is. I mean, Group F or G is what I would like. Helsinki, yeah. I priced Helsinki this morning. Looks fairly cheap. So you fly through Amsterdam, so at least you can fly from Aberdeen out there. Frankfurt as well, at least you'd have direct flights from Edinburgh to there. Manchester as well, you could probably fly from Glasgow. I guess the only thing as well with a couple of the English teams being in Europe as well, some of those prices from London airports might shoot up as well. Same with Liverpool, and I guess depending if we were also away at the same time as Rangers, flights from Glasgow and Edinburgh might also shoot up as well.
No, it's true. So,
this is the business end now, Phil. This is where the nerves come into play.
I'm getting a bit nervy now.
And butterflies in a stomach as we wait to see when Aberdeen get drawn and who we get drawn against as well.
Oh, be nice to us, Mark.
Yeah, rely on Mark Noble to do us a favour.
Okay.
And it's Klaksvik from the Faroes that are out first. And I wonder, does it mean like whoever's out first goes into a certain group? So if we were like out first, we go straight into Group E,
probably, yeah,
is what I think. So we maybe want somebody else to go in there first and allow us F and G. first instead.
I think he's in. Yeah, there's not really any nation ties for the bottom four groups there, is there?
It's fair, I didn't even write down who's in pot four because I was like, I don't really care. Breidablik come out and go into pot to group B. I'll say friends of ours from a few years ago.
Yeah.
That's some brutal trips, Iceland all the way to Israel.
I'd be impressed if they take any cross continent. They're from Kosovo.
Kosovo, yeah. Oh. And they go into Group C. So still nobody from the bottom half has been drawn, if I'm right. E to H is still fully open.
Yeah.
Five teams left to draw.
So are they going to go straight to
Zorinsky, Mostar? Mostar was... they go into Group E.
Oh, do they? Oh, so that's fine. Okay.
I can see E flashing on the screen. So there is no trip to Alkmaar. We will not be reunited with Ibrahim Sadiq, and we will not have to be embarrassed by Aston Villa like Hibs were. So Group F and G are alive.
So hopefully
unless Kukariki going... They go into Group F.
Oh, that's unfortunate. We're pinning our hopes on Group G.
We're really panicking. Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, F would have been the best away days.
Oh yeah, that would have been some stunning trips, but we're please Mark, do us a favor.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Favorite. Cheers, Mark.
And there it's Aberdeen have been announced now, and it is gonna be Group G for Aberdeen. What a draw that is. Trips to Frankfurt, Thessaloniki, and HJK Helsinki. Well, if I'm going to do two, I know which two I'm going to do. I'm going to do Frankfurt and Helsinki, but of course the fixtures are being released tomorrow, so I'll have to wait and see how they come out. But that is, I think, Phil, given what we were faced with, 50-50 of Frankfurt, Pauk, or Helsinki versus Fenerbahce, Ludogorets, or Trnava. I think we've got to be happy with that. I mean, I've been to Frankfurt before, the business district of Germany. I mean, we're not the greatest city of German cities you can visit, but 58,000 Deutsche Bank Park, great stadium. I know there's a few Aberdeen fans that have been over to Frankfurt to sample a home game of theirs. So, again, we should get a decent allocation for Frankfurt, and I'm sure many will make that trip across to Germany.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's the one that I'm mainly eyeing up, I think. Obviously, Helsinki would also be quite good.
Yeah.
So, a few of the Hearts fans, when I was down in Edinburgh, heading off to Pauk. So, I don't know how easy flights are from Edinburgh over to there. But
I think, though, the one thing I will say, so Thessaloniki... looking at the Hearts end last night, Hearts had over 1,000 tickets. So again, that one should be an easy one to get tickets for. My the problem with drawing HJK Helsinki is their stadium is only 10,770 capacity. So tickets for the away leg could be quite hard to come by.
Yeah.
Which is great. Hearts away all over again.
Oh God, don't remind me. Do UEFA have any sort of restrictions on like extending like away allocations towards like the home end?
I'm not sure. I was maybe at club discretion. For that one. Now I'm just going to pull it up because
I don't know what their average attendances are. I mean, if their average attendance is only about 5,000-6,000, then.
So just for some that might be yes, Bob Duffer, it's Pauk, who are the third team in the group. They were the team that beat Hearts in the last round. So if I just credit Scotland's COF1 from Twitter, they put down the away allocation for the teams based on 5% minimum. Eintracht Frankfurt's away allocation for ourselves would be 2,575. And I'm sure it'll be great to celebrate with them, of course, 2 years ago, beating Rangers in the final. Helsinki, oh, actually, it's a better away allocation than I thought. Helsinki's away allocation, according to this page, is 1,989.
That's not bad.
I don't think that's right, unless they don't play their games at their actual stadium, because they've got their capacity down as 39,000. But when I looked at Wikipedia, their stadium's only 10,000. So maybe they have to move stadium for European games. I'm not sure. And then Pauk's allocation was 1,435. So, yeah, good options there. Like I said, you've got direct flights to Frankfurt from Edinburgh. You could even, I guess, fly to Amsterdam and get the train if you wanted to keep the price down, because I'm sure the prices are going to go right up as well. We've got decent, decent rail options as well. Paul Donaldson saying they might use the Olympic Stadium in Helsinki. Well, they might do. They might want to cash in on loads of fans coming in as well. This is the other interesting thing. I just seen a comment from Gavin Robertson, and I had not noticed that when I was researching Eintracht Frankfurt, selling their best striker today, but likely getting someone in from PSG in return. Eintracht Frankfurt have lost a few of their kind of star players recently, but it was two late goals that saw them through against Levski Sofia, 3-1 on aggregate. As we all know, Pauk did a number on Hearts. I did watch that first leg at Tynecastle and thought they looked okay. So certainly once they got the second goal, but Hearts caused them problems. Of course, Lawrence Shankland equalised, but VAR ruled out, but they got a pretty fair footballing lesson over in Greece. Can't say no too much about the side from Helsinki, but they do play on an artificial surface as well at their home ground. I don't know what the surface is at the bigger stadium. So I guess interesting to see what stadium they use for that game as well. That'll be the only one that'll maybe be a bit of clamour for tickets if they do use their natural home stadium. But certainly exciting trip-wise, though, for us to look at regardless, Phil.
Yeah, no, I mean, getting to group stages in Europe, regardless of who we got, I think everyone would have been excited and try to get at least one trip in. But no, I think that's a good group to get. I mean, even in terms of playability, like you're saying, I mean, Tynecastle, Pauk didn't look that great to me from what I watched of the game. I haven't watched any of the highlights of their home leg against Hearts. It sounds like they were a lot better, but I suppose we've just got to try and stand up and be accounted for, really. If we go in immediately thinking we're going to get gobbed, of course we're going to go and get gobbed. So, and like I say, if we can maybe get one or two more in today, who knows?
And I guess the only other thing is, if you're looking at kind of the match days, is a potential trip to, if we went and went over to Greece in match day one, you're going to be playing in a really high heat, probably still in October. So you maybe would be wanting to look at playing them a bit later on in the year. But equally, you come into like November and December games, trips to Helsinki will be absolutely freezing. Albeit I'm sure most of them will think the same for coming to Aberdeen in late November and December as well. But some cracking trips. When it comes to fixtures, Phil, just want to get your thoughts on this just really quickly. Would you rather be playing the pot one side in terms of Frankfurt? Would you rather play them first away from home, get that game done and dusted out the way, or look to play the pot three team in Helsinki first, potentially at home, try to put some points on the board and build from that? Or is it really not matter at this stage now?
I think it's all rather negligible. You've got to play everybody at some point. It's the same way as like this season, getting Celtic early on in the league, doesn't matter if we get them first game or last game, we're going to have to play them. You've always got to be ready to play good teams. But I think, like you're saying, I think in terms of sort of climate, I think it would be better to play Helsinki now, away from home potentially, and get that out the road. And also, you know, then obviously get playing on the plastic pitch out the road, because I mean, more minutes in the legs playing on a plastic pitch could cause us more issues with injuries. And then with the transfer window being shut, we've not really got much scope to replace that. So I like the sound of a Helsinki Frankfurt Pauk, that sort of order, I think would be quite good.
Yeah, no, I'm happy with that. Connor Taylor, looking forward to this. Lee Seymour, it's an exciting group to be part of, no matter how it goes, really happy with it. And I think from a fan point of view, I think we've got to be happy. Some great trips at there for us to look forward to as well. So yeah, everyone will be sitting with notifications on the Aberdeen Twitter account. I'll probably put notifications on Frankfurt's and Helsinki's account in case they're at first with releasing the fixtures. But you know, maybe I'm sure, as I said, with the match days known as well, maybe a few people going out and booking some hotels in those various cities as well. I think the only one that'll be interesting is to how to get to Thessaloniki itself. Do you fly into Athens and then use internal transport? You can fly there direct, but I'll maybe message a few Hearts fans and see how they travel there. But it did look a really nice place from some of the videos.
Like I was saying, obviously, because I've moved down the road now, so we're really close to Haymarket, and the Haymarket tram stop that goes out to the airport was just full of Hearts fans. So I don't know if it was a direct flight from Edinburgh or if they were going Edinburgh via, you know, somewhere else. So it'd be interesting to look and see what the flight options are.
Yeah, Mario Götze, a player of note for Frankfurt. That'll be interesting to see him at Ptodre. Flights to Greece from Stansted. So again, maybe it'll be trips down to Luton area from Aberdeen, and then make your way across to Stansted and jump on a flight out there. So lots of research to be done after work, definitely after work.
Yeah, Skyscanner is not going to be a tab that's open.
Yeah, nor booking.com. But Phil, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon to look at that. For those of you that are enjoying the Stones content so far, I'll put up the preview that I had with Michael Monan for the game on Sunday. And just for information as well, we will not have an episode next week because, unlike Callum, I timed my holidays with the international break, albeit I didn't for November, but that's a different story. And it's only Celtic away I miss anyway. So we'll be back the week after the Scotland game against Cyprus with a review of the Hibs game and a look forward to, I think it's Hearts away after that. That shows how interested I am just now.
Yes, it is. 16th of September, yeah.
Yeah, so an Edinburgh double coming up. When we return in a couple of weeks' time. But Phil, thanks again for joining me. And
thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. And it's over to the preview that I had with Michael Monan to look ahead to this Sunday's game.
To the podcast, it's been quite eventful since the last time you were on. What are you doing, first of all?
I'm good, but I'm conscious of the fact that I'm just going to address the elephant in the room. That my glasses are not helping me this afternoon with the fact that we can actually look, you know, when you see the little video with the Illuminati things in the eyes, that's kind of what's coming up here with my eyes. But we've tried everything backstage to try and alleviate this issue, but we cannot seem to help it. But aside from that, I'm doing all right. Football's I've been very good of late, but in my general life, I'm doing okay.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear you're doing well in your general life, and I take great pleasure at watching your football team at this moment in time after what happened back in January. As that kind of now viral tweet went, Aberdeen seemed to be the real winners from that 6-0 defeat at Easter Road, which saw Jim Goodwin climbing the hoardings. You unfortunately got to keep Lee Johnson, and unfortunately, from an Aberdeen point of view, probably fortunately from a Hibs point of view, we don't get to exact revenge on Lee Johnson this weekend, as Hibs are the visitors. I suppose for further context, despite this going to be attached to Friday's live episode, this was pre-recorded on Wednesday evening before Michael makes the trip to Birmingham to watch the second leg of the Villa game. And of course, before we entertain Haken in the playoff second leg. But so a bit of context for first, maybe some of the questions later on in segment. But Michael, I guess whenever we get opposition guests on, and you're used to it yourself being on here, we kind of want to hear what's been happening with the club. It's been well documented what's been going on at Hibernian. So just maybe kind of talk the viewers and listeners through kind of the summer that's been, and your thoughts as Lee Johnson departs Hibs and the search for a new manager begins.
Okay. Not before time is what I would say. The man got far too long relative to his ability and relative to the results that we were getting. We got an extended grace period, I think, due to the fact that we were quite quick to sack managers previously. He's had more money than any manager I can recall, and we're absolutely no further forward from when before he took over. He wasn't a good manager. He wasn't well liked. He never made a real attempt to connect with the Hibs fans. It was more about him rather than him doing it for Hibs. It was about him doing it for him, and I don't have time for that. And a lot of the Hibs fans certainly never had time for that.
It's quite funny though, because you know, for the rest of Scottish football, and certainly journalists, very much enjoyed Lee Johnson's press conferences. There was always a soundbite or a clip that was going to come in there. And I was listening to the Totally Scottish Football podcast, and the host of the Longest podcast was on there, and he said, you know, Lee Johnson's comments were great if you guys won, but when you lost a game, which just now seemed to be more regular occurrence, those sort of comments really didn't help the feeling amongst Hibs supporters. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it pissed a lot of people off. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's the last thing you want to hear when you've been beaten and you've played really badly and you've never really looked like winning, is to hear quotes like "now we've got to hunt for a dinner," or like if you were in a Formula One car or anything. Just shut up, man. Do you know what I mean? Just sometimes you just need to say we weren't our best. We know what the problem was. We're going to try and work on it for the next game. That's sometimes all you need to say, rather than just try to be too clever. And as I say, it works sometimes. Like, people put up with it if you're winning, because it's a little bit of an accessory and a little bit of a laugh. But see, when you're getting beat, just shut up. Do you know what I mean? And just get focus more on the problem at hand, rather than thinking of unique things to come up with in press conferences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can definitely imagine that irking a lot of people. Of course, he's now left the club. Who would you like to see replace Lee Johnson? Of course, as I said, this segment was being recorded on Wednesday evening, and I think Tuesday night the Daily Record broke a story that Neil Lennon is one of the front runners of the candidates, or maybe preferred choice of the Hibs board. Would that be an appointment that you'd be happy with, or the Hibs support would be happy with, or unanimously happy with?
Well, I don't know if you've received this sort of feedback yourself from doing a fans podcast, that when you make a viewpoint on a football team, like for instance for Aberdeen, you're immediately sort of seen as the voice of the support, right? I can't speak for anyone else. I can only speak for myself. I liked him. I thought he was funny. I thought we were good in big games under him, like Hearts, Rangers, Celtic. Especially, we never feared going to Parkhead and Ibrox under him. He has his baggage, of course he does, but he wanted the best for Hibs. He always got the best out of us, and he brought a sort of side to Hibs that under any other manager since I've not really seen. So, and even at the time, it was quite refreshing, because I hadn't really ever seen it prior to him coming in. So from that instance, I did like him. There is an element of how he left us. People say that he sort of orchestrated a move for Celtic when Brendan Rodgers left. How true that is, I don't know. I wouldn't be able to tell you. But on the idea of him coming back, it's one of them. I think with the papers especially, I think it happens quite a lot in terms of they come out as favourites quite quickly just because it seems they get the first amount of press coverage, things like that. How much of that I'd actually read into, I don't know, because I think they must interview a lot of people and they must speak to a lot of people, probably linked with a lot of people. But what I would say is from what he said, I think if he got offered the job, he would take it. Whereas with a lot of other candidates, especially ones that would be quite interesting and quite unique, etc., if you don't know if they would accept it if they were offered. But I think if he got asked, he would say, yeah.
Yeah, I think as well, another point that you've got to consider, and again, when I was listening to the Terrace podcast, they were speaking about, and I know your opinion of the Terrace is slightly tainted given the amount of Jambo representation on that. But I think the point that they made is valid, of course, looking at the fact when this part comes out, it'll be on the last day of the transfer window. So any new appointment has pretty much got to work with what is there and isn't going to have much time to bring in his own players or get rid of the dross that you may currently have. Is that a concern of yours for any incoming manager?
Yeah, no, because I think we've actually got quite a decent squad in terms of players. I think a good nucleus of a squad. Just wanted to chuck that word in there. So in terms of that, I don't think any manager of reasonable managerial capability would have much issue against most teams in the league. The problem with Mr. Johnson was that he bought a lot of players and then either never played them or played them so horrendously out of position that they were absolutely nullified in terms of what they were actually meant to do. Mm-hmm. And I said this to the guy next to me at the game against Livingston. God bless him, he's had to sit next to me for 15 years. But I just said, if you went and asked all the Hibs players what their job was, I don't think any of them would be able to tell you. Whereas Livingston, under Martindale, every single player would be able to tell you what they were there to do, what they were supposed to do, what their role was. I think that's the difference. And I think the first three games for us in the league, that's been the difference. The other three teams, they've probably not been better than us in terms of actual quality, but they've all known what they're meant to be doing, whereas we just look like 11 guys put on a park and said, go and just see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, I saw your tweet at halftime of the first leg against Aston Villa, and I think, you know, Craig Leach is in a WhatsApp group that I'm in, and both of you had the same opinion. Is yes, Villa were a very good side, yes, they did play you off the park at times, but the manner in which you conceded the goals was very generous from a Hibs point of view. And I think as well, if you see certainly the second goal on Saturday against Livingston, only 82 seconds after you equalised, is a very generous concession as well. And I suppose from a Hibs point of view and an encouraging point of view from an Aberdeen side of things is maybe how weak Hibs have looked defensively so far this season.
Glenn, I said this to you 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Do you know the game when I came up and we went for a drink after?
I was like 4-0.
No, it was 1-0. Ramirez scored.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know the game I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. I thought it was the game you left at half-time that you were speaking about.
No. That was different. On that podcast, prior to that podcast, I said the same thing. I said, we just keep losing goals from crosses. But it was Matt Macy that was a problem because he wouldn't come off his line. Now we just can't defend. So nothing's changed in that time in terms of being able to defend crosses. And you'd think, like, our defensive coach is like a fullback. Like, Lee Johnson was a left back. You know what I mean? Like, surely to God, you would think, right, this is basic. That was his fundamental role as a player. He made a living out of doing it. Defending crosses. Can't do it.
Yeah, but you can't do it. One person that does know how to defend and also knows how to score a winner in a Scottish Cup final. David Gray, set to be, or Sir David Gray, probably should address him in front of you, is set to take charge of the Hibs team on Sunday. What sort of impact, if any, are you expecting him to have on the team when he's in charge of the dugout?
Probably a wee bit more. I think we'll have a more balanced side to us, just in terms of caution, probably a bit cautious. I'd like to think we'd be a wee bit more organised, but to be honest, it's not much to compare to. Yeah, I think probably just set up, probably try and be quite hard to break down, I'd think, and try and get yous on the counter. That's what I'm thinking. That's what I would do. But
I guess
it's hard to know.
I guess with the game on Thursday, it's kind of hard to know what sort of game you're going to experience, whether or not Aston Villa are going to rest some players for this game, but also likely what Hibs are going to do as well. Would it be a chance for David Gray to maybe implement a style into that game and still play most of that first 11, or will he look to give maybe some of the fringe players some additional minutes, given the tie is effectively over as well? Given that sense that the tie was pretty much over going into the game, I take it really Thursday's not going to have too much impact for you on Sunday, unless of course it is 90 minutes chasing the ball about the park.
Right, I'll answer your first one first. I think it'll be a mix. I think certain players probably won't play if they've got more importance for Sunday. Right? So I think our sort of better players might not play. Or if they do play, they'll come off quite early.
Yeah.
But it's hard to know for Sunday because it depends who you get on as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you could go to extra time, 120 minutes, then get beaten 4-2 in penalties. Nah, I'm joking. I think he'll probably go through, to be honest. And I think it's also a disgrace that we get Aston Villa, a team that will probably win that entire tournament. How they're even in that tournament is ridiculous. And you get that mob in the so-called higher tournament. It's a disgrace. But anyway, that's by the by. And what was the other part of your question?
How that those players playing, if you're chasing the ball for 90 minutes, oh, how that was,
well, I think well play. I think if it's the sort of fringe players, it won't really matter because they're probably not going to play on Sunday. But if it's a it does depend on what team he plays tomorrow, but I don't think we'll play our strongest team because I think it's pointless.
I think
we'll go through.
Yeah, you don't think he'll go through? Is this Stephen Thompson? The tie's over. Like, I guess as well, you're absolutely right. Sunday's really going to depend a lot on what Aberdeen do as well, because we could be on a total high from tomorrow night, or we could be on a total downer, depending what way the game goes. And as you rightly said, we spoke about it on the podcast. That came out on Tuesday was the fact that the game could well go to extra time and penalties, with the fact that there's no away goal ruling in Europe this season. But also a kind of interesting side note is the fact that so far, after playing on Thursday, Hibs, including on a Wednesday, after playing in Europe, no side has won their follow-up league match. Before you go to correct me, the fact that the guys won in the League Cup, but you know, it's interesting because somebody potentially could come out of this game ruining that stat. But from an Aberdeen point of view, I'm pretty confident this fixture seems to be dominated by the home side. In recent times. Mm-hmm. In fact, the last time Hibs won at Pittodrie, you were sitting on this podcast live watching the game with me and Callum as we did a watch-along, and Christian Deutsch bagged the winner to all but seal third place for Hibs. Oh, how times have changed since then.
But we've still got them, which is part of the Lee Johnson problem. He deemed Mr. Doidge not good enough last season, yet he started him as a main striker at the beginning of the season. So go figure. With that, for what it's worth, I think Doidge's actually done reasonably well this season, but I just thought I'd chuck that in. I think that with regards to Sunday, I think that had we had Lee Johnson, I think you would have been more worried.
You think?
Yeah, because I think that we said this prior to our Luzerne game at home. When he needs a result, he gets one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't think that the reaction from Saturday would have happened. I thought it would have happened on this coming Sunday.
Mm.
And then we would have sacked him going into the international break. That's what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's one of them, and it's not like you want to lose, because I never want Hibs to lose, but it's just like, if we win, it keeps him here.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, because I think you actually said that after the Luzerne home game, even it might have been, or the away game, I can't remember which, but you almost said that result effectively kept him in the job for another couple of weeks, because he'd bought himself that by getting you to the playoff round. Obviously, as you said, probably the hardest draw you could have got out of that as well. But it's interesting because, yeah, you're right. Of course, back in January when Lee Johnson needed a result, he stepped up and got the result. And as I said, ultimately, despite doing that in January, we've come out on the better side of that. But I guess, you know, this new manager bounce, interim manager in David Gray's case, interesting to see kind of what effect that does have going into the game on Sunday. How much in terms of personnel do you think David Gray will change it from what Lee Johnson's been kind of starting, and whether that be formation as well?
Well, personnel, I'm not too sure. I just hope he plays everyone in the right position. That would be a good start to any game, to give yourself a chance of doing anything. Play players where they're meant to play. I think I'm not entirely sure of a injury and suspension list, to be honest, at the moment. But I think if we have a full complement of players, I don't think he'll change too much, to be honest. I think he'll just sort of hopefully tidy it up a wee bit. As I say, it was very, very messy. Players not knowing they were playing.
I suppose the biggest one from an Aberdeen point of view is kind of, maybe you could help clarify, is the situation around the goalkeeper, because of course Max Boric was in goals against Livingston at the weekend. Is that down to an injury for David Marshall? Do you expect Max to retain his place going into this weekend, or
well,
Marshall back?
Marshall got injured in the first half, had to come off.
Ah, right.
And then the Boric guy came on. But I was listening because I wanted to know myself regarding David Marshall. And I listened to David Gray's interview earlier, and they got asked about Marshall, and he said that apparently Marshall's came out it better than expected. But with regards to tomorrow night, or last night for people watching on Friday, that we've got to leave it as late as we can with regards to decision time. And apparently it's up to David Marshall whether or not he deems himself fit enough to play. But I think if he plays on Thursday, or if he just doesn't play on Thursday, I think he'll be playing on Sunday, basically. Unless Boric has a game of his life tomorrow and we manage to go through, I think Marshall will be playing in goals on Sunday.
I think I've just seen a pig fly past my window there when you said that Hibs might go through.
Listen, you never know. You never know.
I mean, strange things happen. If we, I mean, as we
if
said,
Starville FC can beat Aberdeen Football Club. The 3,000 time winner of any football tournament that's ever been in existence. Anything Hibs can beat Aston Villa with a 5-0 deficit.
Well, we'll see. I'll eat my hat live on Friday if you get through. In terms of an Aberdeen side, obviously, that you'll be facing on Sunday, again, it's kind of difficult doing this pre
ahead of Thursday. What kind of are you expecting from Aberdeen? Obviously, from my point of view, it's not been the best start to the league season so far. Mm-hmm. Just 2 points out in a possible nine. A spirited performance against Celtic, but ultimately returned no points and pretty dreadful showings on the road, but ultimately picked points from both showings. I guess, does it depend for you what happens with Aberdeen on Thursday? Kind of what you're maybe expecting from the game?
I think it'll definitely have an impact, because I mean, three players could beat the leg tomorrow. That's obviously going to change things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think we always struggle in Aberdeen for some reason.
It's that North Sea breeze.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's absolutely freezing, but it shouldn't matter, really. I don't know. But it's that one. It's always that phrase. It's why you keep going. You could win. You're due one. Do you know what I mean? And we are due winning up at Aberdeen. And to be honest, it'd be a very Hibs thing to do, to go and win in Aberdeen when we're absolutely on the floor. And it'd be a very Aberdeen thing to do, to go through tomorrow night and get turned over by Hibs on Sunday. So you never know. I mean, I think I never go up to Aberdeen thinking we're going to win, because if I did that, I'd be wrong every single time I've ever been. But I don't know. I hope so, obviously, but I think it'll be a hard game. It's always hard in Aberdeen for some.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a hard game regardless, because Barry's obviously showing up this Mirren game. We didn't really kind of make any real changes, and again, it's difficult to say depending what happens on Thursday, as you've alluded to, if there was to be any injuries, but also extra time could have that impact on what sort of lineup we go. We've obviously added Pape Habib Gueye to the side this week. Could we see him involved in some capacity? Richard Jensen, Jamie McGarry, all in terms of maybe needing some more minutes. Again, depends on their involvement on Thursday night. Jamie McGrath, of course, as well in there. So we've got an opportunity to potentially freshen up certain positions, but also the likes of Angus McDonald, who I would expect to start, is maybe still lacking some minutes in terms of pre-season, but obviously more than capable in terms of filling in and producing a good performance. But, you know, as you said, it would be typical of Hibs to come up and get a result in when nobody's maybe expecting it. Obviously, you'd be hoping it. But I guess this is an interesting game as well, because if you take out the European exploits from this, it's a game where both sides almost need to win to really kickstart their league campaign. And I think that's fair to say, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's just typical that whoever does win and gets a little bit of momentum, that momentum is blunted by the international break.
Yeah, very, very true.
And I think,
No, on you go.
I was just going to say, for both perspectives, I think we spoke about this pre-season, that we had very sort of generous fixtures to start the season. And I think certainly not us, but I don't even think Aberdeen have took advantage of it. Maybe, possibly with the exception of Celtic for yourselves, but I think from the other two games, Livingston and St Mirren, I mean, if it wasn't for a slight tackling penalty, you'd have had 1 point. But we should have had... I mean, I think we should have had 9 points from those fixtures, but at least seven. And they come with zeros.
I think from a Hibs point of view, I looked at your first five fixtures and thought, given the fact that potentially, of course, you might not have been in European action going into this game, I looked at kind of our run August, September, thinking it's pretty tricky. You know, with the fact that we've got Ross County, obviously that should hopefully be 3 points at home, but we've also got Hearts and Rangers away after the international break to come as well. And this game for me, depending on how both teams started the season, could have been a potentially tricky game. Yeah. I looked at kind of our fixtures, and despite not picking up any points in Paisley in recent seasons, I would have liked to think, again, this was before the season started, I think we said on the, both of us said on the podcast, to be looking for 6 points, maybe seven at best from the opening three fixtures going into this game. So, and I certainly looked up at Hibs's run of fixtures thinking that's a pretty favourable start to the season as well. And you've definitely not taken advantage of that. So, as I said, it's a game where both teams will be looking to win. So cue a dull and terrible 0-0 now that we've tried to pick up either side needing a win.
Take that, get a point on the board. You know what's bad? You know what's bad when you're bottom of the league and St Johnston, who haven't scored a goal, are above you.
Yeah.
That's when you know what it.
I know you're looking for a point already just to hang on to St Johnston's coattails before you get cut adrift from them, because no doubt they'll pick up three against Dundee.
Couldn't believe that when I read it. And I can't believe they got a draw at Celtic Park as well.
Oh, honestly, they were 55-1 to win that game. Absolutely mental.
But it's just they just ridiculous. They seem to go away. Like, you just want them gone, and they just seem to just find a way to constantly just stay here.
Yeah, they're you just cannot flush them away. But yeah, the likes of you and Hearts will happily go away for a couple of seasons and then reappear.
Well, we just want a wee bit of scenery. You guys could do with it up in your.
We're quite happy still maintaining our premiership status.
Of the ASI, no problem.
Yeah. Well, Michael, enjoy your trip to Birmingham. I hope you enjoyed your trip to Birmingham, I guess, if we're keeping in line with this coming out on Friday. And enjoy your day out in Aberdeen, and I'm sure you'll be leaving Pittodrie early once again.
Yeah, probably. Thanks. I had a great time in Birmingham. And I'm looking forward to Aberdeen. But I don't know what's going to happen. I hope we can win, but I don't count on it.
No, well, I don't think you can count on that, of course. But again, thanks very much for joining in. And I hope those of you that have been tuned into this episode on Friday have enjoyed this little look ahead to the game on Sunday and enjoyed the watch along of the group stage draw as well. So enjoy your weekend. Enjoy booking up your hotels and flights to wherever we may have been drawn. And come on, you Reds!
Sports Social Podcast Network.